Welcome into the Locked On Knicks podcast today. I'm lucky enough to be joined by John Schmelk, former host of the Bank Shot podcast, to talk a whole lot of topics, including Julius Randle. Can the Knicks actually get off him? And was Mitchell Robinson's contract good value? All that right now on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now.
Starts with a five. Ewing for the win. Yes.
Up and puck left. Now fires a three.
And he's good. And he's fouled. It's done. And he makes it.
Anthony for three.
You are Locked On Knicks, and I want to thank you for making Locked On Knicks your first listen today and every day. We are now available on all platforms, including on YouTube. And who's talking to you? I am Gavin Shaw, a play-by-play broadcaster, lucky enough to be joined by the fantastic John Schmelk, one of the GOATs of Knicks coverage, I would say, over the last couple of years. Always great to get his take. We get a whole lot of it. This is the first of two parts, so I won't delay it any longer. Let's get into our Knicks conversation with John. All right, guys, as promised, we are joined by my friend John Schmelk, the former host of the Bank Shot podcast covering the New York Knicks for WFAN there, and currently the do-everything man for the New York Giants, reporter, producer, podcast host. And John, you're just telling me you just had a second kid, so full schedule. Thank you for fitting me in for a little bit of time to talk some Knicks.
Yeah, no problem. Just got back from a little vacation, seeing my wife's folks back home where she's from in Iowa. So we just got off the plane today. I'm a little bleary-eyed, but was keeping track of Nick free agency out there, obviously, is for the people that follow me on Twitter. And then I'm back with the Giants off my paternity leave next week. And you can check out the Giants Podcast Network if you're a Giant fan out there, giants.com/podcast. We got a few shows, Big Blue Kickoff Live, Giants Huddle. Make sure you guys go check that out when we're back in business. Training camps in a few weeks, man. NFL comes fast and furious. There's really no offseason anymore except for like 3 weeks in June and July. So kind of enjoying that now. And then it's back to the grind.
Yeah, I feel similar about the Giants as I do about the Knicks. Some cautious optimism there. And one of those starting points are the Knicks bringing back Mitchell Robinson, a guy, John, over the years. I feel like the last 2 years, I don't know why I came out this way, but I feel like we had you on to do the player preview for him. So
yeah, it's funny. I was wondering, yeah. Do you think I'm some kind of Mitchell Robinson expert or something?
Yeah. You're the Mitch whisperer. You get him. No, but I've always like, had good points on him. So I was curious to talk about him. Obviously, that 4 year, $60 million deal. We don't know yet if there's a team option or anything in the final year of that deal, but tentatively, pending use of Nurkic's new contract makes him the 17th highest paid center in the NBA. What was your initial reaction to hearing that the Knicks were bringing Mitch back at that number?
Oh, that he was overpaid. I mean, again, we have to wait. Maybe this is more like without incentives and a team option on the fourth year, something more like a 3 year, $42 million contract, in which or something like that, in which case maybe it's a little bit more reasonable. But look, I think Mitchell Robinson is more like a 10 to 11 million a year player. You know what I mean? That's just what I think that he is, to be honest with you. He's good at what he's good at. He's a good rim protector. He's a good defender. He's shown no offensive game other than his dunk game. And don't talk to me about workout videos. I don't care. They don't matter. And I think what bothers me the most is I don't know how mature the guy is. So I don't know how he's going to handle getting all this guaranteed money in a big contract. You know, last year he came in out of shape. Yeah, he had a foot injury in the offseason. I get it. But can you trust him to bring it every night and to be that consistent guy? And do you trust him to put in the work and be the mature enough guy to improve in some of the areas he needs to improve on? So, yes, while he is obviously – you know, skilled and very important to Tom Thibodeau's scheme and the way the Knicks want to play their defense with their drop scheme. You could be looking at a contract much like Nerlens Noel's contract from last offseason that's very difficult to move if you want to have to move it.
Yeah, we did an initial reaction podcast on the contract this morning. We didn't really get into this, but who were they competing against for this contract is sort of where my head went immediately, because it kind of felt like the market for Mitch dried up. The team that was most often mentioned was the Pistons, and obviously they took Jalen Duren and seemingly are pretty set at that spot. Who knows, the Suns potentially could have gotten involved down the road, depending on how the DeAndre Ayton thing turned out. But it just didn't seem like there were a lot of obvious teams out there that were like, yes, we want Mitchell Robinson. And I guess the counterpoint to that is the Knicks had somehow a post All-Star break, a top three defense. And I think a lot of that was Mitch getting healthy. And it's interesting, right? Because he limits your scheme versatility to some extent, just because, and maybe this changes this year, but last year to me, he didn't seem quite as switchable. He didn't seem quite as mobile on the perimeter. And that was what, in my mind, when I was advocating last offseason, you got to get a deal done with this guy. That's what made him special, right? I was looking at him as one of those guys, sort of like a DeAndre Ayton, who you're just not going to be able to play him off the floor in the playoffs because he's too fleet of foot. He's too good at blocking shots from three-point range. Sure, like the best guards in the league are going to toast the best defensive centers in the league. I mean, that's true for Rudy Gobert. But I maybe not at a Gobert level, but I did think he could be that type of defender. And last year, seemingly because of that added weight, it seemed like he lost a little bit of that athletic pop. And because of it, he was even better around the rim, I think, on both ends, particularly offensively, and just had some monster games where he just looked dominant. But there was no counter move. And the question with Mitch is, what is the next step in his game? And is the biggest thing to have just having more shooting around him, playing with a better point guard? Because you rarely see centers like someone commented when we put out the episode, like, oh, he's got to go work with Hakeem Olajuwon. I'm like, Dwight Howard seemingly went to work with Hakeem Olajuwon 4 straight summers. Like, he never got better as a post player. Like, you don't see centers develop a post game mid career. I think this is what you're getting at, but to me, sort of seems like he is who he is. So I guess, John, what I'm getting at is, like, what is the best case scenario here? How does this look if it goes well?
If it goes well, he's, you know, in line for a defensive player of the year award at some point. I don't think that's ridiculous to think he's capable of doing that, because he's already good on defense. Can he become even better? I think there's a shot at that. Would I bet on that? No. But I think that's probably your best case scenario. And then he becomes a dominant rebounder, right? So he gets a lot of points on lobs. He gets a lot of points on putbacks. He's never going to be a guy you get to dump the ball to and say, go get us a basket. If fans think he's going to be that guy, and look, I hope I'm wrong. I really do. But I think, you know, they're fooling themselves. I know he's young and all that stuff. I just don't see it. I mean, look at that shoot free throws. Is that a guy that you're confident is going to have like a really good touch somewhere and is going to develop an offensive game? Not me. So I think that's what he's going to be. I think he needs to be a guy that gets his points on as a dive man, as an offensive rebounder. And I think those are the two parts of his game that we saw growth last year as a rebounder. We've, of course, seen him as a finisher throughout his career. And we've seen him as a good defensive player. So if he can just become, you know, closer to elite than good in those areas, I think that's probably your realistic best case scenario there. Will he get there? We'll see. I'm with you. I think he kind of is what he is at this point. And look, if you can get pieces around him and use him that way, that's great. But look, to your point, centers, and this is why when the Knicks were in the draft this year, I said, look, just don't draft a center. Why? Because centers get played off the floor in the playoffs every single year. I mean, Robert Williams is like peak what you want Mitchell Robinson to be, right? He got played off the floor in some of these playoff series this year. I know he was hurt too. But look, it's hard to play these centers when teams go small. It's just a really tough thing to do. So I think it's a lot of money. Now, the counter edge to that, and which is why I'm not upset about the signing, I understand it. I just think it's an overpay, is when you're in the Knicks situation here where you're operating as an over-the-cap team and you're still building, you don't let assets walk away for nothing. So I would have been happy to explore sign-in trades to get a better player. But I, like you said, I just don't know where the interest was for another team in doing that. So I'm not sure how realistic that was. So I'm okay bringing him back. I just hope the contract doesn't make it impossible to move him in the future if you need to.
Yeah, and I think if he's healthy, I don't think it is, because he is in a lot of ways in skill set like the generic dive center that is kind of a dime a dozen in the NBA, but he's sort of the best version of that, right? Like, literally holds the NBA's all-time record for field goal percentage with 100 percentile in finishing at the rim. It's arguably the best offensive rebounder in all of basketball. He does that as well as anyone else. And in the regular season, you need that guy. In certain matchups in the playoffs, you really need that guy. So I think if he continues, to your point, to sharpen those skills, there'll be a point where he's tradable, and there'll be a point, I think, for this Knicks team to hit their ceiling, barring, to your point, like a turn for him where he is a defensive player of the year type guy, where they will need to trade him, and it will make more sense to have Jericho Sims and Isaiah Hartenstein. I know those two guys maybe aren't going to be here forever. But like, to me, that's like a fine center combo. If you're on, like, if you had something along the lines of what the Nets had in terms of stars, but obviously the Knicks are a long way from that. So I'm ultimately with you there. All right, guys, when we come back with John, we are going to get into more Julius Randle talk. But first, I only have one word to say. Boom shakalaka. We have big news. The one and only NBA Jam is back. Arcade 1UP, the leader in at-home retro arcade games, is not only bringing the best game ever back, but they made it bigger than ever before with, wait for it, a Shaq edition. People are obsessed with NBA Jam, and I'm thrilled to tell our listeners that you can once again play hoops with NBA legends in this arcade classic. In one of the first sports games ever to feature real and digitized NBA licensed teams, there are no fouls, no free throws, and no quarters required. You can be with friends and family through all new Wi-Fi leaderboards, making you more connected than ever before. Pre-order now from arcade1up.com. That's arcade1up.com for an estimated early September ship date. They've got even more classics like Golden Tee, Mortal Kombat, one of my favorites, and many others starting at just $399. And check this out, guys. This is where it gets really cool. They are giving away an NBA Jam Shaq edition to a Locked On listener. So enter for a chance to win a game console for your man cave at arcade1up.com/lockedon. That's arcade1up.com/lockedon. You've got till July 8th to enter to win an NBA Jam Shaq edition console. Don't miss out. Enter today. There's only one question left. Who are you gonna play with? I want to pivot to someone who we talked about an incredible amount during the regular season. I feel like I got like taken off guard duty for the last 2 months. It's like, all right, man, you don't have to talk about Julius Randle. You can talk about the draft. You can talk about free agents. You can do a million episodes on Jalen Brunson. We're gonna give you a break. You need it. But it's becoming that time again where we sort of all, like, as Knicks fans, have that question in our mind: are they really going to bring this guy back? And John, I'll throw that to you just like that. Are they really going to bring this guy back?
And by the way, I'll throw it out there too. I think Fred Katz had the quotes in his article about the Mitchell Robinson signing. I think I like Robinson, hurts a guy like Randle, where he talked about, look, I got to play in the perimeter more because Robinson's in the lane and Jalen Brunson, he's a guy that gets the basket. And, you know, he's not a guy that gets there really quickly. He kind of navigates his way there. Just his presence, you know, messed its spacing up a little bit. So I think that's part of the equation too. But look, Thibodeau wants him. He wants a traditional center, and that's fine. You live with it. Oh boy. Look, I think Randle's going to be here at least for now. I think, and this is one of the, and I don't think enough people have talked about this. One of the reasons I really like the Brunson signing is that as much as Tom Thibodeau drove Knicks fans nuts last year because he refused to take the ball out of Julius Randle's hands, It drove me nuts too. I'm in that camp. I kind of understood why he didn't do it, why he decided to keep him as that centerpiece of the offense while he was healthy, even though the shooting numbers were bad, the attitude was crap, and all that stuff. There's no one else on this roster last year that you could trust to really move and distribute and run an offense. I know people love RJ. He's just not a passer yet. I mean, he's just not that guy yet. You know, Alec Burks, they tried to shoehorn to do it as a point guard. I think they could have given Quickly more of a run. They didn't. I think that's fairly as on Thibodeau. He's probably the guy that was best and most suited for that role. But I think what I love about the Brunson signing is that I think by having Brunson here, someone that Tom Thibodeau can trust, you'll get the ball out of Randle's hands more. And I think he'll end up being more of a finisher than he will be a creator. And hopefully less, you know, dribble the ball around and take a step back 18-footer and fans want to, you know, slam their face into the wall. I think you'll get less of that because Brunson's somebody Thibodeau can trust. So I think we'll hopefully get a little bit of a lower usage and more efficient version of Randle this year. And hopefully that'll make him a better player and maybe more attractive in a trade as you move forward. So he'll kind of look more like New Orleans Randle in terms of how he plays than he looked like Knicks Randle, you know, the last 2 years, for example. And hopefully his three-point shot goes in. If he can get that to like 34% or 35%, that would go a real long way too. So I think Randle's back. They're going to try to rehabilitate his value. I don't think this front office wants to bail on him for nothing. Look, would I bail on him for a more complimentary player for what the Knicks have and a younger guy, you know, with a neutral contract that's similar to Randle, maybe a year shorter? I probably would. I still think this Knicks front office wants to get a little bit more out of him. And I think, frankly, if he was going to move, he would have moved by now. Look, I think the teams have kind of made their moves by now. I'd be shocked if it happened before the season. Maybe by the trade deadline, if everything's going well and always playing well and they want to move off of him, sure. But I think any hope of it happening this offseason is pretty much now off the table.
Yeah, I mean, I think Obi's the obvious fly in the ointment here beyond Randall in a vacuum. I mean, just how well he's played during the season. Like, I'll spoil like a future question. I wanted to wrap the show up asking you what you're most excited about for next year. And it sort of got me thinking about it. And I was like, oh, Obi Toppin. And I was like, oh yeah, he's probably only going to play 16 minutes a game. And after averaging, what was it, 27 points per game over the last 8 or 9. And again, who knows if that was real. Competition wasn't great. Situation was weird. Team was playing very fast. He was shooting 56% from three, which probably will not continue this season. But I've said it all offseason. I just want to see at this point with Obi, and I think he's done enough to earn a chance. And Mark Berman came on this podcast and he said, you know, the Knicks are a little bit more open to moving Randall than they once were because Obi Toppin opened some eyes in that front office. And they were like, you know, this dude, we put a lot of assets into him in terms of taking him with the 8th pick in the draft. He might be worth it. We got to give him that chance. And right now it doesn't look like he's going to get it to start the season. And I guess to your point, having some acceptance of that's probably not realistic. How does this still work with the starting lineup? I think not that people have learned from last season in terms of having sky high expectations for this Knicks team, or even expectations that they will make the playoffs. But I still question how it's actually going to look on opening day, almost more so than I did last year, where I was like, oh, they got Kemba and they got Fournier. It's going to make so much sense with all that shooting all over the floor. This year, between Brunson, RJ, and Randall, I think you have three very real question marks in terms of how they can spread the floor around Mitchell Robinson, in that Brunson's like greatest strength this point as a three-point shooter, even though the percentage is good, is that he was automatic from the corners and got a lot of those corner threes thanks to Luka Doncic. Randall had the one great season. Outside of that, has been by and large a terrible three-point shooter for his entire career. RJ Barrett, second year was mostly really good. We still have yet to see it off the dribble with any kind of consistency. I'm worried we're looking at a team that, even with the addition of Brunson, who all in all is a hyper-efficient player, I don't know, John, do you think this starting lineup meshes? Do you think the collective passing or just overall skill level of those guys can make this work? Or are you kind of seeing what I'm seeing there, where it's like the spacing is just going to be really, really cramped?
Oh, I think the pressure is going to be on Thibodeau now to figure out a way to make this work, right? I mean, you hope RJ, who, you know, as a catch and shoot three-point shooter, is probably a little bit better than what his percentage showed last year. You know, he's not a guy that's going to create his own three-point shot or create really any jumper off the dribble at this point. But I think he's fine catch and shoot. And I think – so I'm assuming you think it's going to be Brunson, RJ, Randall, Mitch. And then do you think they're going to resist putting Fournier back there with Brunson because of the defense? Could they put IQ back there? What do you think they're going to do for the two-guard spot?
I think there's a pretty decent chance it's Grimes if he has a big summer league. You know, with Tibbs, my inclination is that they're going to go with Fournier until proven otherwise. But maybe that's a little wishful thinking on my part. But
you know,
I think
Tibbs cares about the defense, man. Like, that might drive him nuts.
Yeah, but and I guess to that point, we might have seen that shift last year if Grimes had stayed healthy. And also, Fournier pretty much went volcanic over the second half of the season in terms of how well he shot it. So another offseason for Grimes, maybe that change happens. But to me, he's the guy who clearly makes the most sense there, just because he's such a willing shooter, similar to Fournier, but you get that defense.
No, I agree. And look, I think back to your previous point too, I think you might, you know, Randall's minutes went from like 37.5 to 35 last year to the, you know, 2 years ago to this year. I could see that going down to 32 this year, to be honest with you. Like, that wouldn't shock me. I think Thibodeau got tired of his act, to be honest with you. I just think, you know, much to his chagrin, he did not buy into Obi enough. And look, I still have my doubts about Obi in a lot of ways too, in terms of being like a future all-star or something like that. But for me, I think they do have shooting. Like, IQ can shoot. I think he's a better shooter than what his percentages show because he takes such difficult shots sometimes. RJ, like I said, I like him as a catch and shoot guy. Fournier can shoot it. So, and Grimes can shoot it on the catch. And, you know, I think he's a pretty good movement catch and shoot shooter guy too. So I think they can do it. The question is, can you mix and match those guys enough? And I go back to when the Knicks had their good year, right? And oftentimes it was like Rose and IQ that were closing games together that year, because that worked well together. So, you know, at some point instead of say, look, I'm going to put Brunson and quickly out there, and maybe I'm going to go small, and maybe I'm going to have RJ play the four a little bit. Maybe I'm going to close my games with Brunson, Grimes, or Brunson, IQ, Fournier, Barrett, and, you know, Mitch or something like that, or Obi at center. You know, it's going to be up to Thibodeau to do things a little bit differently. And, you know, I think it was Berman that kind of said he Thibodeau kind of had a come to Jesus moment with the front office after the year a little bit, you know, and I think he's going to have to do things a little bit differently and mix and match the starters and benches a bit and have those lineups be a little bit different than what his ideal one might look like in a vacuum to match what talent the Knicks have on the roster. Because I do think that they have a lot of young guys here that are fun to watch, have complementary skill sets, if you can get them out there in the right combinations.
All right, guys, I want to get into one final conversation with John. We're going to talk some team building stuff, and I want to get his thoughts on the NBA draft and how the Knicks handled it. But first, I want to satisfy that sweet tooth of yours in a very healthy, protein-rich way. There's only one thing in the whole wide world that can do that. It's, of course, Built Bar. From the people who invented healthy and tasty comes the latest gift to your taste buds. You've probably tried the amazing coconut brownie chunk Built Bar, but guess what? Your friends at Built have given coconut brownie chunk the puff treatment. That's right, the coconut brownie chunk Built Bar flavor you love in a deliciously chewy marshmallow covered in 100% real chocolate. It's like a fluffy cloud of coconut brownie goodness. But stop drooling and listen up. They are good for you. Low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and all delicious. Coconut brownie chunk puffs are here for a limited time, so go to built.com. Now, to make sure you don't miss out, they're going fast because they taste amazing. All Built Bars are made with collagen protein, which your body absorbs more efficiently and provides tons of health benefits. Eat something that tastes good and is good for you. The best part about Built Puffs is, of course, they taste amazing, but you can enjoy them guilt-free because they are actually good for you. They are the perfect treat, perfect for when you've got a craving, you need to satisfy your sweet tooth, or if you need a quick, healthy snack. They're an excellent source of protein. Delicious coconut, rich, sweet brownie, creamy marshmallow. Stop fantasizing and go to built.com right now to order your box of coconut brownie chunk Built Puffs right now. So all you have to do is go to built.com and use promo code LOCK15 and get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCK15. Yeah, and I think that was, I mean, a lot of, as much as it was to clear up salary, like getting off of Burks, getting off of Noel, getting off of Kemba. Kemba aside, for the other two, like in a vacuum, Noel fully healthy, still, I think, a really helpful player. Burks, I think, when he's not being used as the world's most miscast point guard of all time, really, really good player, like exceptionally fun guy to watch. But the young guys, that was the shining light of last season, was these guys had real synergy. And it was obviously, everyone knows about IQ and Obi and how they influenced every single lineup that they were in. Like I noted it on the pod we did earlier today, IQ, Obi, Mitch together plus 14 and a half per 100 possessions in almost 300 minutes last year. Not a lot, but not nothing either. And the way Deuce and Jericho fit in with those guys. I mean, again, if you were going to make a case to me for not bringing Mitchell Robinson back, it would have been like, wow, Hardenstein, maybe really underrated. And you can play Obi at center a little bit. And Jericho, again, the defensive synergy. Like I flash back to that Nets game that they ultimately lost where they got up by 30-something, and it was the Nets, again, without KD or Kyrie. So how much do you want to take away from that? But there was just this possession where I think it was IQ and Jericho like swarming someone in the corner, and then Deuce came over and like scrambled to like take someone else on the wing, and then Jericho rotated back to the rim and altered the shot. And just the synergy, the speed, the defensive IQ that those guys have. The Knicks, again, it's not a championship core, but they have guys with playoff pedigree. Sounds weird because I think you can almost interpret that as experience, but I think guys who are playoff type of players and whose skill sets, to your point when you say they're complementary, make each other better than they would be individually, or certainly better than they are playing off of someone like Julius Randle, which to me, I'm okay, even if you have to attach like 2 second round picks to get off Julius Randle, or even one of those distant firsts. Like, I know that sounds crazy for a guy who made all NBA a year ago, but I feel like it's the definition of an insanity running this thing back. This was a guy who, after that Bulls win, where all the young guys played well, like slammed the basketball on the court, went to the locker room and allegedly asked for a trade. And when you noted earlier that he was going to play like New Orleans Randle, I would be all for that. Like him as a rim runner, swinging passes on the short roll out to shooters. Like there's a guy who's a perfect fit on this Knicks team in there. I just don't think he wants to be that dude after he made second team All-NBA. And in part because there isn't sort of the clear, like, I don't think it's Brunson. Even if RJ takes a step forward, I don't know if it's him. I don't think there's a guy on this team that he thinks in his head is better than him. And I think that's going to be a big problem for the Knicks.
No, look, you're right. I think that's why, much like you, I'd be willing to get off of him for a neutral contract or whatever. You know, if you take Davis Bertans back or something like that, who's got a, does he have what, 1 year shorter contract than Randall or something like that?
Yeah.
You know, I'd be willing to do something like that, to your point. But now that he's here, look, that's why I think a lot of pressure's on Thibodeau here to make sure that you don't run it back the same way you did last year. And if Randall doesn't like that, too bad. And then you figure it out. Now, Randall hasn't exactly shown the ability to deal with adversity very well here, and things can get ugly very quickly, which is, frankly, one of the reasons I would be okay with moving him, because I do think you can get to a breaking point here where now maybe his contract, Gavin, is a little bit of a negative, right? And, you know, you might have to attach a second-round pick or take back a player with a bad contract back. You know, he could do something and be his poison pill to the point where his contract becomes, you know, albatrossy. And that's what you want to avoid, and you want to get him off the team before that happens. So I think you really need to have that talk with Randall now and make sure he's willing to take that reduced role and not be the guy everything runs through, because no Knick fan wants to see that. I doubt Tom Thibodeau wants to see that. I know the front office doesn't want to see that, because we saw the results, you know, when he's not shooting out of his rear end and shooting, you know, 40% from three, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm with you. And I think you brought up a good point too. I like the Hartenstein signing. I thought it was a good value. I think he's an upcoming player. I think he's a good player. And that was another reason why I wasn't thrilled about the Mitch signing, not just the money, but that means you're never going to see Obi and Randall play again together. You know what I mean? You're never going to see Obi at center now, ever. Like, you're just not going to see it, because Thibodeau has too many guys on the roster that have to, that are there and available to play center in the way he wants them to play. And to your other point, you talked about clearing the roster with Noel and Burks. Yeah, well, you know what? They need to get Derrick Rose off the roster. I know fans love him, and every time I say the Knicks need to trade Derrick Rose, fans get mad at me. And I'm not saying you attach assets to do it or anything like that. You know, maybe a team that's a contender needs a bench scorer at the trade deadline, and Rose has a good first couple months of the year, and you can get something for him. I don't think that's out of the question, given he's basically an expiring contract with that non-guaranteed third year. But look, you need to play. Emmanuel quickly deserves to play 25 to 30 minutes a game. He just does. He was that good last year when he played. So, and if Rose is on that, this team, is that happening? I don't know the answer to that question. I would venture to say my answer is no. And that's going to make a lot of people very unhappy, fans, and I think probably people in the front office too. So I think it is important to get off of Rose at some point. If you can do it in a neutral way now and not have to take anything back or something like that, great. If you have to wait, build up his value a little bit, then get something back for him, that's fine too. I'm not trading those future ones. You need them for a potential future star trade. More importantly, Gavin, for me, I think what those ones are going to be, what those extra first round picks are going to be used for, especially if the Wizards squeak their way into the playoffs this year and you get that pick conveying, you know, next summer as like the 14th or 15th pick in the draft or 16th pick in the draft, something like that. Much like the Knicks had to trade up in the draft this year, I think they're going to be very heavily involved using those picks to try to draft a star next year by combining their potential three 2021 picks or 2023 picks, pardon me, and maybe those future picks as well to try to move up. So I would not move one of those ones just to move Randall, because I would want to use those as a potential move up trade in the draft where, you know, if you're trying to move, let's say the Knicks are picking 13th, right? Just as an example, they lose in the play-in tournament, right? They're picking 13th. And they want to move up to 6. You know, if you're offering picks 15, 22, your pick at 13, and then another future first, you know, 4 first-round picks for a team that's still rebuilding and they're picking 6 or 7, that's a pretty good package. And maybe if it's a smaller guard to play next to Brunson, maybe instead of 4 picks, you trade 2 of those ones and you throw them quickly or something, you know, something like that. And then I think that's a realistic, pretty good package to try to move up in a draft to draft the guy that you like. And I still think, I realize it's the longest answer ever, I apologize. I still think that it's almost impossible, except for some of the outliers like the LeBron Miami team, though he had Dwayne Wade, the Laker team when LeBron and Anthony Davis came via trade. It's very difficult to build a consistently winning championship caliber team if you do not draft and build a homegrown superstar in one way, shape, or form. It's just too hard to sign a guy in free agency and trade for another one. It's really, really hard to do asset-wise and just make it work to build a balanced enough roster with those two stars if you don't draft one of them. So I do still think the Knicks have to figure out a way to draft one if they want to make this work and eventually compete for a championship. So I do think, and we could talk about the future plans, what the next step is. I think a big part of that is next year's draft, which is supposed to be very strong. Again, I don't follow this stuff. I'm just going by what I read, that it should be strong. And the seventh pick next year should be a lot better than the seventh pick this year. And if you have enough draft capital and move up in a situation like that, you might be able to get a future guy that can maybe be your homegrown star in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, and to your point, that might have been the Knicks' logic. I'm not going all in on this year's draft. And I think we saw a situation where the guys that they valued in that capacity, the Shaden Sharps, the Jaden Ivies, maybe even Johnny Davis, were all off the board. And that's why the Knicks operated the way they did. Certainly, that's definitely a generous interpretation of what happened. But you threw out the name a bunch of times that I wanted to get to next. Emmanuel Quickly, far and away, one of my favorite players, obviously, on the Knicks. And someone, I mean, you mentioned people will be sad. I will put myself ahead of that list of people who will be sad if he is playing 20 minutes a game next year, because as impressive as Obi Toppin was, man, oh man, Emmanuel Quickly's the way he was able to orchestrate games from a penetration and drawing doubles and sometimes triples and kicking out, it was just a very, very different guy than what we saw, certainly from his rookie year, but also from the earlier parts of last year, where he just got major separation from defenders and seemingly has figured out how to leverage his quickness and turned himself into, if not, certainly not a great finisher at the rim, but someone who will at least attempt a layup every once in a while. And given how good he is on the perimeter, how good his floater game is, that's a really significant step for him. And I'm a little scared that with this Brunson signing, and to your point, Derrick Rose, a Tom Thibodeau favorite, and in all fairness, arguably the Knicks' best player whenever he's been healthy over the last, like, essentially since they acquired him, I'd be willing to make that case. He might not play quite as much. And even if Rose is traded, part of my concern is that down the stretches of games, Tibbs will find it untenable defensively to play Brunson and Quickly together. My pushback on that was he played Rose and Quickly together.
Yeah, I agree.
A ton back in the day. And I would say Brunson and Rose, obviously different strengths. I'd say fairly equivalent defensively. And I think Quickly, look, there are matchups where you can't do it. I've referenced the Celtics.
I like Quickly defensively. I think Quickly's underrated defensively. I really do.
I'm with you. No, and he's, I mean, underrated part of that skill set, an elite rim protector for a guard. You go up against the Jalen Brunson one night, like, things get a little dicey just from a size and weight perspective. But in a whole lot of matchups around the NBA, if you're going to build your offense around going at Emmanuel Quickly, I mean, I would say to most teams, have at it. And what I think about Brunson, and this is when we were talking about Brunson 5, 6, 7 months ago, what I kept saying, the idea of him and Quickly playing together with their combined craft offensively and how savvy those two guys, and I think this is where Quickly made such an improvement and where Brunson was maybe just born as kind of a genius at doing this, the way they pause and put defenses in a bind and get defenses thinking, I think it could have a multiplicative effect having both those guys on the floor. You play him with someone like Obi Toppin, who's also very quick thinking. You play him with someone like Hartenstein, who can really pass. I'm super excited to see some of these bench units. It's kind of what you were getting at. I hope Tom Thibodeau agrees and we get to see it at least and see if it works.
No, look, I'm with you. And I'm not as quite, I mean, I got yelled at by Schwinn when I was on the Strickland a couple weeks ago for not just basically saying, oh, Quickly's going to be an all-star. Like, I don't know if I'm there.
Yeah.
I think good starter, I'm willing to go there. I'm still looking for that elite skill from him to pop. You know, his percentages aren't quite good enough for me to call him an elite shooter, and I still don't think he's an elite penetrator or an elite passer. So, you know, I think he's improving at some of those things, good at some of those things. I don't know if I think he's great at any of those things yet. Now, he can obviously get there. He's a very young player. He just played a couple of years, so there's a ton of room for improvement, no question. But look, I think at the very worst, at the very least, he's going to be a good starter or like an elite, like Jamal Crawford level, like six man type player, you know, in this league in terms of impact, not in terms of style and the way he plays. So to me, good player. If you have to eventually include him in a trade to get like a superstar, I think you have to do it. And by the way, I would put RJ Barrett in that bucket as well. That's why I don't think the Knicks have their star yet. I think they have good players. And I talked about how they have complementary skill sets, Gavin, but I don't think they have that great player yet for them to complement, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I've said that again. They have the core of a championship team without the number one guy and without the number two guy, really.
Yeah.
That's sort of what this team is, right? And I mean, to be fair, you could say that about a lot of teams in the NBA. Like, oh, you throw LeBron James and Anthony Davis 2 years ago on those teams, they're going to be really good. So I don't, in some ways, I don't know how much that's saying. And in other ways, like, I think this rebuild, like, it has elements of what the Raptors did, what the Grizzlies did, and that they're compiling good player after good player after good player. But you don't have a Ja Morant. You don't have a Kawhi Leonard. You don't go anywhere with those guys. And I guess that, that brings
and
me
by the
to,
way, credit yeah. to the front office. They added these guys with like picks in the 20s. Like, yeah, really yeah. nice job.
All right, guys. And that's it for this one with John. Shout out to him. One of the GOATs. Always have a blast talking to him. We will be back tomorrow. We get into a fun team building conversation where we tell you how the Knicks are actually going to finish next year, right? We go through every single team in the NBA, tell you where the Knicks rank, and so much more on this front office and why you should maybe be a little bit more optimistic than you currently are about the Knicks' future. We'll get into that tomorrow with John. But until then, be good. Remember to subscribe, like, comment, all that good stuff. The YouTube comments have been blowing up. We really appreciate it, guys. Lots of positive stuff in there. It's been me and Alex feel all warm and fuzzy inside. But again, we'll talk to you tomorrow on Locked On Knicks.